Hello and welcome back to Vox Burner's Youth Trends podcast. This is the final episode in our mini-series from YMS New York. This week is your chance to hear from a group of people who are leading their business through a crucial age of disruption. Our leadership panel features CEOs and senior execs from Culture Trip, Swell, Cedulet, Shutterstock, Fairy Godboss, and Industry City, with our panel hosted by Vox Burner's founder, Simon Eder.
Hello, everybody. So it is now time to move on to leadership redefined and how company leaders, those that sit in senior positions, are keeping up in an age of disruption. Let's introduce ourselves, starting maybe from left to right. And on introducing ourselves, if we can also maybe say how Gen Z has influenced either our marketing strategies or our business, starting on my left.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is Raquel Latchman. I go by Rocky. I was recently Vice President of Marketing at Swell. Before that, grew up at startups in Silicon Valley as well as here in New York. And before startups, I was at big companies, the Coca-Cola Company, American Express, and BlackRock. And so to your question, I would say for me, Gen Z has really pushed me as a leader to really stretch my mindset beyond being an older millennial and to really think about their experiences and how as a leader can not just think about marketing, but also leading them in their careers and really helping to meet their needs and keep them at our companies.
Hi there, I'm Romy Newman, the co-founder of Fairy Godboss. We're the largest career community for women. And I would say that Gen Z influences me every day because they are such an essential part of our online community, which we hope will be a community for every woman who's interested in advancing her career. And I think it's about, you know, it's about understanding engagement and how to, Gen Z keeps you on your toes and demands engagement and attention and thoughtfulness and creativity and raises the bar, I think, for what we all have to deliver in a product.
Keeps our socks pulled up.
Hi, my name's Grant Monroe. I'm an entrepreneur. I founded a company in Toronto that creates original content for brand marketers. So we have a freelance network and a software platform. We were recently acquired by Shutterstock, so now we're part of the bigger ecosystem of creative. How Gen Z helped our business is you hear the buzzword authenticity a lot, but they're really good at calling bullshit on unauthentic content, so they've helped us push the boundary there.
Hi, my name is Leda Hernandez. I'm the founder and CEO of Cedulux. We do trend forecasting in the luxury space. So we work with brands, agencies, and investors to understand new consumers, redefine market trends, and identify opportunities and challenges anywhere from 3 months to 10 years from now. So very kind of forward thinking. How Gen Z influences our business, I would say in two ways. One, in that we're trying to understand their values and behavior so that we can understand how we're supposed to market and communicate to them when they do become luxury consumers. And then the second part of that, I would say, is Gen Z entrepreneurs within the luxury space who are actually creating, you know, very niche, handcrafted brands that service their niche specifically. So it's kind of Gen Z luxury entrepreneurs creating products for their own generation. So I would say those two things. Gen Z from a values and behavior standpoint, and then also from the perspective of what they're doing from an entrepreneur standpoint within the luxury space.
Great, thank you. And now our next person is very, very important. Lauren is really our host over these 2 days. Lauren is from Industry City. So there's a little introduction, but Lauren will share more.
Thank you,
but
Simon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. My name is Lauren Danziger, and I am actually quite new to Industry City. I was most recently running the Meatpacking District, if you're familiar with that neighborhood. And I think the parallels between Industry City and the Meatpacking District as far as our audience and Gen Z being one of them, is about community and how people engage. And I think at Gen Z, when you think about the communities that they're forming, that they're engaging with, it is about something bigger than themselves. So there's a thought process that I think is elevating the stereotype beyond a youth about, it's not just about me, it's how I'm communicating in the world, what do I value, and where I'm going in my career and in my life and in the communities that I engage with, they have to mean something beyond paycheck, beyond a friend. Do we share those same values? Do they move me forward in a way that I feel is meaningful? And I think in my world, even though it's called marketing, it's very much about building community. That's, you know, paramount.
Great. And last, but by no means least.
Hi. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Carter. I'm VP of Marketing at Culture Trip. We're a startup focused on media, travel, and entertainment. And our mission is to help people explore what's unique and special about a place, its people, and its cultures. We're very tied to Gen Z, so we have a global network of creators around the world, over 350 plus. They're filmmakers, writers, illustrators, animators, and photographers. And we also, because we're a startup and we're in hyper growth, we have a young workforce, and so they're very, very tied to us.
Great, thank you, and welcome to you all. And I think we've, you know, already heard important like buzzwords that we've encountered already today from the panel about Gen Z challenging us around diversity, culturally, internally, around their kind of like notion of, I don't know, self-improvement, and lots more besides. Now, I want to go a little bit personal, if it's okay, just to start, which is, I'd just like to like understand how you guys are really keeping up with Gen Z. Like, one thing's for sure, they are a fast-evolving audience, and I'm just interested in how you guys. There are no, like all of us are not Gen Z, right? I mean, like myself included. Okay, no assumptions there, but just so that we're on the same page. None of us are Gen Z on stage. I just wondered how, though, you each kind of keep up with the all-important Gen Z generation. Starting, Grant, with you.
So there's been no meaningful innovation coming out of a big business. Like for the last 40 years, I think the biggest innovation was the credit card. The real innovation comes at the fringes, and that's really where the startups live and thrive. And so something I found super useful is to see who's getting funding from a startup perspective in that space and what specifically they are doing, because they've obviously caught on to some nugget.
What kind of advice really do you have for everyone in terms of like keeping up with Gen Z?
Yeah, well, so I started my career working in the uninnovative corporate culture, right? And I sat, as an executive, I sat behind a door in an office. And so it's amazing now that I sit with all of our employees, who many of whom are Gen Z. So I'm sort of absorbing their life every day. But I think from our perspective, what I love about our platform is that we can really hear the voices and opinions of our users all the time. And so it's crystal clear on any, we have sort of like a real-time barometer on what's on Gen Z's and all of our users' minds at any given day and any given time. So I think talking and listening is just essential, and immersing yourself.
Yeah, I would say for me, along those lines of listening, I think for me it's about following. So as you would in any sort of social media, following brands, following influencers, following research. You know, I follow brands I know that Gen Z is following, so I can see how those brands are interacting with them, what products they're providing. I follow influencers that I'm not necessarily interested in, but I know that Gen Z is interested in these influencers. So I can have a sense. It's a live focus group all day long, and I have a sense of how they're interacting. And then for me, I love research, so I follow research, more standardized research, and then some publications. I'd say one thing that I've started to do, and I'm actually stealing this from someone else, from a panel I attended last year, but having, instead of my always mentoring, having a Gen Z mentor me. And so they don't know they're mentoring me because they don't like that word, mentoring, but you know, I spend time with them and understand some of the challenges they're having, whether it's in school or elsewhere. And I actually think that's a really great way of me just staying fresh and staying in tune with them.
So I would love to piggyback off of that mentoring statement, because I think when you're in a mentoring relationship, whether you're the mentor or the mentee, two people learn, right?
Exactly.
So my approach, I guess, is very similar. So I teach as an adjunct at a few different universities. I mostly teach grad school, but I do teach at the Fashion Institute. I teach undergraduate there. And so all of my students are on the oldest end of Gen Z, basically. And so as a professor, I teach them a lot, obviously, so they learn a lot from me, but I also learn a lot from them because I get to kind of study them in their natural habitat. Without them knowing that I'm paying attention to what they're doing. Yeah, so there's things that I see that are already kind of different just from millennials and just the oldest group of Gen Z. Like simple things like their college experience is completely different. They are broadcasting and putting everything live, Instagram live, IG live, and my college experience was not like that. Like nothing, there was no evidence of any parties that happened when I was in college. So it's a completely different, I mean, even college is a completely different experience for them. So that's what I do, but what my recommendation would be is to keep up with culture, keep up with music. Music is such a good indicator of a society's values and what they care about and how that's like changing over time. So if you look at the evolution of language, especially in music, you can sometimes kind of pick out the evolution of culture that goes along with it. What themes are being talked about, how they're being talked about, and the language that is being used. So that would be my recommendation for all of you, making sure that you're keeping up with culture, specifically with music, because I think paying attention to the evolution of language gives you a lot of indications about what they're thinking of and how they think about things.
I feel like all these answers were pretty amazing. So the best thing to contribute. I think the one thing I'll say is I think that the farther I get away from the age of Gen Z, the more curious I become. It's, I think, difficult as we age to remain open. I've found my opinions and my beliefs become more solid. So to counteract that, I am actively participating in things that might not necessarily draw me in. So participating in what is being drawn out of the Gen Z or the Generation Z, and being really careful, I think, as a marketer to avoid what's cool, what's next, versus what Grant said earlier. It's a buzzword for a reason. If it has to feel right, it's authentic. And I think that is what resonates most with me when I think about Gen Z and how to communicate with them, because not everything's gonna resonate with everyone. You can't please everyone, and figuring out who your audience is and if in that segment or in that audience there's a segment that's Gen Z, what will they be connecting about, whether it's cultural or something else. I think building a relationship has to feel authentic, and so engaging in that community is, I agree with you 1,000%, it's the most important part of learning and moving forward with your plans and your programming.
Ditto to everything everyone said.
I promise with the next one we're going to stir up some controversy.
I think the beauty of this group is they're not scared to share. So all you have to really do is listen to them. They're very vocal. To offer up just something different from everyone else is, I do things way past my bedtime. So I actually go out and I go to the places they're going and I just experience it for myself. There's nothing like being there and taking it in. I don't always love it. I'm the grandma on the corner often, but it's just really important to like absorb what's happening.
I can feel the question in the room. Where do you go?
Well, I've been to Brooklyn Steel a few times, which I actually like because I'd go to some shows there. I've been taken to little bars that I don't remember the names of, but they're very cool. It's just like what I've found is they're into experiences, and they like to do things that, even though people say are Instagrammable, it has to have something more tangible to them, and I think that's a direction we're going. So right now, everybody's into creating experiential events. And we are too, as well. That's an area that we're moving into. What I think we've seen right now is like people were creating events just for the picture, and there's going to be a little bit of a backlash on that. And you've got to walk out with more than you walked in with, beyond just a post.
So Elizabeth is going to take us to the after party, way after this. Just picking up, Elizabeth, on your last point, I wonder if anyone else like wants to pick up that theme around, you know, this generation thinks in pictures. I know Instagram, I think we're in the room, maybe they're still in the room, but this is a very visual generation for sure. You said that there might be a backlash around that. I wonder if anyone has comments on that.
Yeah, well, there was an interesting piece in the New York Times around experiences. I think that's what you're referring to as well. I won't name some of the experiences. I actually have some friends who are producing some. But I think the reality is that the assumption that they only care about Instagrammable moments, that's where the backlash comes from. Because while those moments are important, they have to be rooted in something that's real. So I do think that is sometimes a mistake that we make, is that we assume, or they just care about they just care about a flower wall. They actually do care about the cause behind the flower wall. They care about the story, the inspiration that led you to create the company. So I think realizing that they're multidimensional, Instagram moments are very important. If it's not on Instagram, it didn't happen, as I was told. But the real, this is when I'm being mentored, I was told, if you don't post this, it didn't happen. So now I'm sure to take a photo each time. But also, what's the root of what they're experiencing? I think not forgetting that element is important.
This is probably a general question, but do you guys feel that, so if you're a marketer and you want to understand your audience, there's like a wealth of third-party data that looks at interests and tags and categories, and so as you get more granular in segmentation, is it different when you're looking at the Gen Z segment? So can you extract the insight using the same process that you would, you know, the millennial mom or the baby boomer, because they're all living their lives online? So I think that's generally a question. If you've got that procedure and methodology in place, there's a lot of information because they're so digital savvy that you can just apply it. On the Instagram worthy sort of thing, like, yeah, 100%. One of the things actually we see our brands struggle with is, so if you're doing a story, it's ephemeral and it goes away, and that's fine. Whereas if you put something on your profile, it lives there forever. Like younger people, we understand that. I'm not one of that group, but they generally understand that, and they alter their behavior. Whereas if you're a brand, you're still applying these strict brand guidelines to ephemeral content that's supposed to be in the moment and in real time, which completely slows down the process and is counterintuitive. So that's something interesting we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is just kind of given the nature of the social media and the vehicles we've got, this is the least mysterious marketing assignment that has ever been, right? Because you can connect directly, and there are opportunities to connect directly with the target consumer. You can read and study exactly what matters to the target consumer. And I would also add that I think, even though the world is defined by visuals, this is a generation that's much more politically active and socially conscious than any in generations. So I think even though stories are told in pictures, it's not about cosmetics, and it's not about it's not about image. It's more about the context and the meaning behind it.
So I think you really have to think about how they communicate and meet them on their ground. I think social media is definitely one of those things, but you have to think about how they're using social media, which is very different from generations before them. The way I like to think about it is Gen X texts, Gen Y millennials talk in memes, and Gen Z talks in hieroglyphics, like emojis and videos and GIFs, right? So I think you really have to kind of meet them in the language that they understand. Like, having somebody from a Gen Z generation write a bunch of, like, actually write is not something that they're actually good at. But giving audio, verbal communication, and also communicating in a visual form is much, it's something that's a lot more comfortable for them. From kind of answering your question in terms of segmenting Generation Z, I would say that you do have to take a different approach, because there are some things that are very much kind of like traditional demographic data that have been, you know, that have rang true for the marketing profession for decades that no longer hold weight. So I would say things like segmenting by gender is no longer as valid. I think also segmenting by ethnicity is also like not as valid anymore because you do have a much more multiracial and diverse audience. So being able to say that this gender or this race or this ethnicity behaves or thinks this way, I think is a lot less appropriate for this audience than maybe generations before that. So I think segmentation by gender, I think segmentation by ethnicity, I think those things are less valuable for this audience.
You gonna disagree?
Well, I was gonna say, I believe that it's actually, I agree, but I think across the board, I think across all generations now with this concept of delayed adulting or embracing adulting and like age is not a number, it's how you feel. It's, you're seeing that segmentation, I think, and we're doing a segmentation study right now that's actually based on attitudes and behaviors and not traditional demographics. And what we're pulling out of it and gleaning from it is really more useful to us now. Just because you could be 35 and you could, you know, want to go to concerts all the time, just like you could be 25 and want to go to concerts all the time. Like, it just, the age and the traditional way of breaking people up doesn't necessarily matter as much anymore.
I was actually going to disagree with something Romy said, only in that, and I'm taking it at face value, that I do think it is about image. I think because the way Gen Z communicates is so public and so visual that there is an unconscious bent, and I don't know if this is backed up by data, but towards image. Well, and I stand by what I said earlier about the Gen Z being inspiring to me by the fact that the things that they communicate publicly definitely, or that participate in, have to have bigger meaning, have to, you know, societal impact is really important and at the forefront, but that becomes a part of who you are. And so if you're putting out, which they are, in a way that none of us ever did, in this very public, visual way that they're communicating with people, it is about image. And I do think that, unconscious or not, it's super important to them.
I want to, if it's okay, move into a slightly different dimension, which is just thinking ahead with, of course, all important marketeers in the room, with increased technology that we are seeing accelerating, like, for sure. What it is that we all need to do to prepare as future marketeers, whether or not we see technology as replacing like us, and we, or at least what we currently do, and with that in mind, how we can keep up and future-proof the CMO role. Who wants to grab that? Yeah.
So I think so. One of the distinguishing points of a startup versus a big company is startups tend to picture what the future looks like and then try to figure out what their piece in that future is, whereas big companies look back at what historical performance existed and try to infer future performance as a result. If you take the GDP, every sector is being hit with automation, robotics, AI, which is going to bring all the costs down. And so in a thought exercise, thinking through, if you with a smaller income can afford all your necessary goods and services, what becomes your reason for getting up in the morning if you don't actually need to work the 40 hours? And it starts to drive this question around purpose and then what you value. And the trend that we're seeing is, you know, fewer brands tending towards services, but people struggling to find a broader purpose in their life through their work. And we're seeing that through multiple generations, and it's just being amplified as that lifestyle hits. And so I think every single one of those things, AI, robotics, it's going to have a huge impact. No one can predict when, but it's coming. So just keep an eye out. There's no future-proofing, by the way. We're both screwed.
Well, actually, I would build on that and say already, whether you have to pay the bills or not, Gen Z is much more concerned with whether the work they're doing to pay the bills is contributing to a greater social good and is not interested in roles or places to work that don't. And so I think, you know, large corporations are changing to address that. But I think that, as leaders, we all have to think about the experience that we're creating to engage Gen Z so that we can bring them into the workforce and hire them and appease them and retain them, because they are the fuel of innovation for the companies. They're essential, and their embrace of a technology that previous generations don't understand is going to be so critical. So I think it's important to think that as employees, Gen Z has a really different perspective. They expect to have their voice equitable and heard. They expect to be able to contribute from day one. They want to work on things that they want to work on. And it's a very different relationship with their manager and their employer than certainly I had starting in the workplace many years ago.
I just want to give a specific example. So we were just talking. I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old daughter, and they probably will never drive a car. And so automation is going to change the vehicle. And so today a car weighs 2,000 pounds, and it's because we're all terrible drivers and that has to protect us. So when automation comes and self-driving, those cars will be like 200 pounds, and there'll be tons of them in the city, and you can work while you drive to work. And, you know, how is that going to change the city? How is that going to change how you spend your time? So this is real stuff that's happening that I think to hypothesize on is really, really hard, but it's going to have a major impact.
I think kind of going off of that driving thing, I think it's going to be a huge change in a lot of different ways, because even when your daughters turn 15 or 16, that was kind of like a rite of passage of becoming a teenager. That was like a benchmark point of growing up. If you no longer have a driver's license and that's not a thing, what are those benchmarks now going to be when it comes to growing up, and what are those life milestones going to be? I also think that you have to think about, when it comes to technology, you have to think about not Gen Z, but the generation that comes after them, which is Generation Alpha. So that's the children of millennials, so the kids that are being born now, so kids 2011 and after. The expectation that they have of technology is absolutely crazy. I have a 10-year-old niece, and I mean, millennials are like, we still see VR, AR, those are novel technologies. You know, we're still amazed by them. I mean, we should be amazed by them. It's amazing. But if you talk to a 10-year-old, augmented reality is not a novel thing. To them, this is normal. It's just a cool toy. They already have AR. They have Pokemon Go. That was literally that was augmented reality at scale. They also have Snapchat, which is augmented reality in the form of filters. So AR is not something they're going to be impressed by. AR is in their toys. They think it's a fun toy. So I think the expectation of technology is just going to be vastly different. The bar is going to be set way higher. They're not going to be impressed by your website and your social media and your e-commerce. So I think that's just something we need to think about. It's not just about millennials and Gen Z and worrying about our own jobs. The change is going to happen whether we like it or not, and it's going to be driven by generations younger than us, and we need to be prepared. We need to know that that's coming, and we need to prepare ourselves for it. But I don't think it serves to anybody's benefit to try to act like it's not happening.
Well, I will disagree with something that was said earlier about future-proofing. I don't know if you're serious or not, but I actually do think you future-proof your career by being open to learning. I think you, irrespective of what your title is, I think you have to have this openness that there's always an opportunity for me to learn and grow. And I do think that's how you future-proof your career, because you stay open to the fact that AR, VR is not impressive to generations after us. And so understanding, well, what is impressive, and being open to that, I think that helps you to push further, and that helps to separate you from those who may feel established and feel very comfortable with what they know, because the world is always changing, as we already established earlier, and so for us to change with it is really important, especially professionally.
By the way, Generation Alpha is going to be adults in like 10 years. So if we're worried about Generation Z, like, you know, there's a lot to be thinking about.
And we'll be marketing to them before that.
Yeah, and the change is going to happen very quickly.
I completely agree with what Rocky was saying, because so I think that there is a and has been a trend over the last 10, 20 years where technology has been such at the forefront of the dialogue about what's next and what's new, that there has been a less of a focus, I don't know if it's a disinterest, on those who came before you and what you can learn from that. So my father started a dialogue. He started a conference called the Intergenerational Forum, because he was so curious about, as a senior citizen, what high school students were doing, because he sees them on their phone. He's the worst, by the way, always on his phone. But he was like, how do we move forward as a society when the old and the young are looking like this and not looking like this? And so he literally started the Intergenerational Forum. Five seniors in high school, five seniors citizens, a couple of questions talking about the world. So you can never underestimate, particularly in marketing, because it's how we communicate, the power of dialogue and being curious about other, whether or not it's through technology and that sort of form of communication, or whether it's verbal. I think that's so important to remember.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just take kind of a pivot on this answer from everybody, because I think just from a practical standpoint, something you can do no matter who you're marketing to when it comes to technology is always say, is it helping the user? And what are we? What am I using it for? So there's a lot of shiny toys right now. What I'm excited about is like, what's the shiny toy gonna do next? So everybody's kind of been awed and inspired, but now it actually, we need to start evolving the technology to do something. So that's the key. Technology should always be answering, how is it helping the user? What is it bringing to the user?
Great, okay, let's I know we've only got a few more minutes left, but it would be great to interact with you guys. Any questions? Yes, in the middle there. And if you say your name and company.
Hi, I'm Carrie. I run marketing for Teen Vogue. We're seeing the pendulum almost swing back a little bit, where things like vinyl and tangible products and snail mail and even email are working in ways that we didn't really foresee. Is that something that you've noticed, as much as we're all obsessed with technology and what's next and never been done before, that somehow things that might be novel to this generation that aren't novel to us are back in fashion?
With vinyl, do you mean that there's like a return to like previous generations?
Or your
like
streaming music actually having something you can hold is interesting, you know?
Okay. So do we see, is Back to the Future happening?
Yeah, so we call that nostalgia. and it's basically bringing things back from previous periods that Gen Z thinks are like very, very interesting, but are things that they have probably never, that are not part of their day-to-day life. So their, I guess their version of like novelty and vintage is maybe like 10, 20 years ago. So, so we call that nostalgia. And so most of you have probably noticed that like a lot of 90s fashion and things like that are back. So that's part of that. Like a lot of this kind of like, this kind of like, you know, coming back full circle in terms of things that, you know, that things that are novel to them. And I think it's really interesting because they have a completely different experience of the world than a lot of us have had. So simple things like when you're on a computer, that save button is a floppy disk. They've never seen a floppy disk, so this is a save button. So I think things like cassettes are very interesting to them. We see it all the time across the board with media, but with goods and also with fashion. What we've called it is nostalgia, but that's kind of, it's probably been starting, I would say probably in the last year or so that trend really kind of started.
Okay, I tell you what, maybe just for a final like whip round, as we've only got a few minutes left, we've thought a lot about like what's going to happen next, and I just wondered, you know, in your roles, adopting, you know, the kind of all important, you know, cause that Gen Z are so motivated by, I really wonder, thinking 10 years from now, what the legacy that you want to leave to the next generation is?
So that's a really great question. I think it's interesting when I think about younger generations, there's always this race to the elevator. So I'm a big believer that you should take the stairs versus taking the elevator. And so the legacy I want to leave is that I didn't win just by getting there quickly. I actually took the stairs and learned my craft and taught my teams to win, but win with integrity. So all the headlines we're seeing about companies that are winning because of unethical behavior, of inappropriate behavior, I think some of that is because the leadership that are at those companies, whether they're startups or larger companies, I think some of those folks took the elevator. They didn't take the stairs.
Yeah, so I am very focused on a statistic from the World Economic Forum that gender parity in the workplace is 217 years away, which means that not even Gen Alpha will experience it. So I think a lot every day about how to significantly compress that timeline so that my daughter would be able to have a more equitable experience. And it's interesting what you were saying, that if you do research, you don't perceive differences in gender or differences among racial lines. And I wish that bore out in the experience. But I always say, my co-founder and I always say, you know, we both entered the workforce many years ago and came from a college class where we were 50-50 men and women. And we thought, oh, gender diversity is my mother's issue. This is not going to be a problem for me. And then as we've risen through the ranks at work and had more responsibility, we face more obstacles, more discrimination. And I don't want that to be true for Generation Z. I fear that unless we do something very radical, it will be.
Well, let's hope that the split on the panel, which is, you know, is representative of times going forward.
Now more than ever, I think, yes.
To the only man on the panel.
It hard to not sound super cliche when you answer that question, but I think for me it's struggle, but struggle through doing meaningful things that are really hard that you're ultimately passionate about. Actually, was speaking to a Flashstock contributor, and like even today there's so many ways to earn a living. You don't have to be confined to a desktop and a cubicle, and that shouldn't be an excuse. So find something that's really, really hard but ultimately satisfying.
I would say what I want to leave for the next generation is empathy. I think that there's several things. Gen Z is a generation that is constantly connected. They're getting devices at a very early age. And the way that I like to think about it, when I was a kid, it was like if there was a terrorist attack or a school shooting, it was on the 6 o'clock news, right? For this generation, they have devices. When there's a school shooting, they're watching it live from first person point of view of the people that are inside of that situation while the shooter is still in the building. And they are continuously watching it throughout the rest of the day in terms of how many people have died and all of this stuff. So I think that level of trauma, of that kind of like traumatic media, I don't know what that's gonna do, but it's definitely gonna do something. But I would leave for them, I would say empathy in two different ways. I would say from a generational standpoint, I think they're a very industrious group, but I think that they need to be able to relate to other generations more. Millennials, for example, are the largest generation in the workforce. So at the previous panel, my question was kind of like, how do we match up millennials' economic power with, you know, the manpower that Gen Z has available right now? So I think matching up with other generations and being able to understand that, you know, one generation can move things forward, but if you have a collective kind of community, and that understanding, that shared understanding between different generations, you can move things a lot faster. With Generation Z, like I said, they're very industrious, but millennials are there's twice as many millennials as there are Gen Z. And we are the largest generation in the working force. Gen X is in a lot of leadership roles right now. Baby boomers are the ones that are leading the country right now. So you cannot change everything without talking to all of the generations. I also think that Gen Z females need to have more empathy towards their male counterparts. And you actually mentioned this in terms of it being like a difficult time for young males. I think there's a lot of female empowerment, and I'm a super supportive of that. But I think there's two parts of that: female empowerment and also breaking traditional gender roles. I think we've done both of those things, or we're actively doing both of those things for women. For males, I don't think we've broken any gender roles for them. Like, you look around this room, most of you are dressed pretty much the same. Like, you are dressed like a man, right? Like, what a man looks like. And so I think that there needs to be a lot more empathy for the other side. You have a lot more women, at least for the past decade, I think there's been more women that have been college educated than men. Like I said, you can't bring the whole entire group together with only half of it. I think you need to be thinking about a whole, thinking about community and thinking about empathy.
That's a great segue, by the way, for the next speaker. We'll come to dress in just a few minutes. But a final line from Lauren and Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think you don't know what you don't know. I think that the younger generations have such direct and immediate access to information that it can often be lost, that experience, getting out from behind your technology, there's benefit to that. And to be open and consider the fact that you might not know something. And in order to do that, it might not be found behind a computer interacting, communicating, all of that's super important. But reminding each other on a day-to-day basis that you don't know everything. So however you get that information, get the information and be open to it.
Embrace the unknown. And last, but by no means least, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're committed to is getting people to learn more, do more, and be open to more. So my hope is that I get to contribute to these younger generations being open to more, so that they're not scared to get out there and experience the world and participate and mingle, and when it feels like everything's closing in, that they allow their borders to open.
Thank you all so much. Please give the panel a round of applause.
Thank you to Simon and all our great panelists for that discussion. And that's all from our mini-series, but we'll be back here in the new year for season two for some more youth trends, where we'll be talking to some of the biggest names in the youth marketing industry space. Have a great Christmas, and we'll see you back here in 2019.